Hi, welcome to the fourth edition of our series on how to apply DevOps to your bots. I'm Donovan Brown, Principal DevOps Program Manager at Microsoft.
And I'm Thiago Almeida, Senior Software Development Engineer here at Microsoft as well.
So this time we're going to be talking about continuous delivery. We've talked about testing, we've talked about continuous integration. Now we have a piece of code that we feel is solid and ready to go, and now we need to start moving it through the pipeline. So what we're going to do now is start talking about continuous delivery or continuous deployment. Some people say in both ways. Yeah. Some people use them interchangeably. We won't go and split that hair right now. But we're going to be doing CD right now. And again, we apply this the exact same way. Again, Visual Studio Team Services, I say it all the time, any language, any platform, doesn't matter if it's Node.js or ASP.NET, we're able to take the output and actually deploy it for you inside of Azure App Service, inside of a web app that we can start using for our bot. You want to, again, just like we said before, make sure that you know all your dependencies. You want to deploy your solution as as a whole, right? You don't want to just deploy one part and then have to manually go do something else. You want to automate that entire pipeline when you're doing it. You also want to make sure you think about things like your Lewis models. You might have had to go train Lewis, and we don't want you to have to go manually do that. You can actually export that Lewis definition and apply it automatically as part of your CI and CD pipeline. So yeah, we want to make sure you do all of that. Why don't you talk to us a little bit, Thiago, about the state of the bot? Because I think that sticks around regardless, right?
Yeah, I briefly mentioned it in the first one, the first presentation, and the bot framework itself, or the bot SDK, they provide ways that you can save state for the bot conversation with the user, and you can do it per dialogue, per conversation, or secure conversation, and then for the user forever. So depending on which level of access you want to have for the specific values, you can save it to use the bot builder SDK for saving those state parameters. For example, the example that we showed before, you know, the one that was a state one, it basically asks your name, asks for the city that you want to search for things in, and it saves that in the bot state.
Okay.
But if you, that state gets saved with the bot, not with your web API that you have deployed, so it's not saved in memory in your web app. So even if you have your app across multiple instances, or if you do a new deployment of it, it will maintain that state values. Of course, and then in your code, one thing to consider is if you have to do things, or if the name of the values have changed for the state, that the name of the variable changed for the state that you're saving, or things like that, then you need to make sure that your code is ready to reset the state that the bot has, because it's not going to disappear by default. The Node SDK, it does allow you to inject something to the bot builder to say, add a reset dialogue.
Okay.
And basically, whenever the user goes, I'm lost in here, reset or restart, it'll basically delete everything from the state and then start from scratch.
Okay.
But if you want to clean it up yourself, it's pretty straightforward as well. You just set all the different types of states, session.conversation data, for example, to an empty object, and it'll remove everything that's in there, and the bot is just going to start from scratch.
Great. So that's important stuff to know when you're deploying a new version of your bot. You don't have to worry about losing the state and conversations that were in flight.
Exactly.
People are going to be able to pick up right where they left off, even using your new functionality. Mm-hmm. So perfect.
Or even like we have in the slides there, we're talking about Lewis, and if all you do is you pick up a few new Lewis utterances to retrain it, you can basically have that list of thing of utterances that you picked up that are new, that aren't working with the bot, and actually save them to file. And if that file is in your source control, which we encourage you to do, it will trigger a new build, a new deployment, and you can have a task in there to just update and retrain Lewis. And in the advanced section, we'll show you a bit of code that you can use to do that with C#.
Perfect. So that's all we wanted to talk about. Now it's time to start showing you how this stuff actually works. So what we're going to do now is we're going to switch over to a demo and show you how continuous delivery can be configured for your bots, just like it can anything else that you're working on from a DevOps perspective. So here we are again inside of Visual Studio Team Services. We're on the hub for releases, and this is where you can see us monitoring all the different releases of the bots that we've been deploying. Just like we had two builds, we also have two releases, one for C# and one for Node.js. I can go into any of these and edit them to show you what the anatomy of this particular release looks like. On the left-hand side, where it says add environment, you have a list of all of the environments. You can have as many environments as you want. And I want to be very clear here. An environment is simply a logical grouping of tasks that you want to perform at any particular time as part of your deployment. I think of them more as stages than I do environments, because you can actually apply several of these to the exact same physical machines that might define, or virtual machines that might define, a dev environment, but they have nothing to do with the fact that I have to do everything for dev in one environment. I could break it up against as many of these as I want. And then I can put approvers before or after each one of those environments, which is also a really cool concept.
If you go back to the testing show that we just have online for you, you will see that we have three environments for testing there and for the Azure bot. And that's basically, we wanted to run them in parallel, so they all depend on it. The first one that's deploying to our beta bot environment and into the web app, and then all those tests run in parallel as part of three different environments in the release definition.
You're right. So I just like people to free their minds and use them however they see fit and don't get caught up on the word environment.
Yeah, I quite like it that you can configure it to say, only run after this one environment is done, and create a workflow between all of these environments.
Yep, you can run them manually, you can run them after a successful previous build, and you can actually have four different environments all waiting for one previous environment to finish, and then they all run in parallel should you have enough agents to do so. So absolutely, it's a really powerful concept. Another thing that you're going to see here are some of the tasks that we're using. The first one is the Azure deployment. This is where we're taking those templates we described in our CI show about defining an ARM template or Azure Resource Manager template. Those ARM templates are actually being utilized by this very first task. Those ARM templates define the web app, the app service plan, and the application insights resources that we need to be deployed for us to successfully host our bot, which we then go and deploy into, and then we stood up some tests that we actually wanted to run.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at the anatomy of an ARM template, it basically has two parts. It has the template itself, and then it has the parameters in which you can pass in. What this allows you to do is it allows you to actually reuse a particular template. So there's two options, and there's two methods of thinking when it comes to how do I set up my ARM templates. I am of the mindset to where I only want there to ever be one template and one parameter file. And then what I do inside of my task is I override the parameter files for each individual environment. The other camp is what we have here, where you actually store the parameters and their values in source control for each environment. That way, everything is in source. And some people are a big fan of saying, if you want to go change a value, you have to go change the source. We're simply going to rerun a build, and all those are going to be applied. The way that I do it, I want to reduce my maintenance, because if you do want a dev, a QA, and a prod environment, and they all need to be changed, you now have three templates that you have to go and update, whereas I only have to update the one, and then I have to go and update my parameters, but then all as well, right? So it's just six one way, half a dozen another. Find what feels really good for you, and apply that same best practices to everything.
One thing to remember as well, we talked about when we were saying continuous deployment, we mentioned looking after the dependencies that you have. And a lot of times for when I'm working with customers and my team, they use up a lot of other things like Azure databases or search. And that's those would be great things to also put into this part of it inside the ARM template, or if there's things that you need to do with an SH file or a PowerShell file to configure things on Azure, you would have all those checked into your source code and put them into your release definition as well.
Absolutely.
To be run by the release definition when it triggers.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what we're looking at here is just a section of your ARM template where you're actually able to define the almost like the app settings for your web app. And when you do that, these values, you're able to go back in and set the parameters you're able to set by passing them in through the definition inside of release management. And then these basically end up being environment variables hosted for your app, which is why when we showed you the code and we're reading from environment variables, that's essentially what we're setting up for each instance that we're deploying. But you see it says parameter here. These parameters can actually be passed in with inside of release management. So if I were to go back, let me get some more real estate over here, and start showing you this particular task, you'll notice down here it says override template parameters. The dash followed by a word is the parameter in which I want to override. And then anything that starts with a dollar sign is a variable that I've defined inside of release management for this environment. And the way that I do that is I come over to the environment, I click on configure variables, and you'll see those names here and the values that I want to pass in for those individual variables. And as you can see here, some of these have already been encrypted and protected because it's sensitive information. But that sensitive information gets safely passed into these arguments here so that I can apply different values to the template as I pass them in. This is just a standard deployment of a web app. This is the same thing that we do for Node or for C#. And then we basically go and run some tests. And then when we're happy with these tests, should all the tests be green, then we're going to go off into our production environment where we have an approver waiting to make sure we get a thumbs up from a human being saying everything looks good. Please go back in and deploy this automatically for me into my prod environment.
And if you go into approvers, you see I configured both of us as approvers there, but I like it, under more options, I like that you can say, oh no, actually it's at the bottom. The last tick box is user creating the release should
cannot,
not approve.
Absolutely.
So if I triggered the commit that takes this all the way through, I shouldn't be the one that can approve this.
Right.
This is
going to be good for all those who have SOX compliance that basically says the chain of ownership and that stops me from putting in a fix that actually siphons money into my account and then being the person that approves it to go into production, right? So this is one of those safeguards there. But there are actually some cool things underneath the more options as well. Even though the two of us are priced here, if I wanted to, I could simply say I want any one user as you have it here to where it won't block just because I'm on vacation and can't approve this. If you approve it, it's good enough.
Yeah.
If I wanted to, however, I could say no, I want everyone in this list to have to approve it, and they can approve it in any order. That means that we're going to send out the notifications to both of us. When you have time, please come in and approve it, but not until both of you approve it will this continue into production. And then you also have the other one, which is, well, this one here is kind of neat because it'll first send the approval to you. I won't even know about it. If you reject it, that's the end of the story. Yeah. I don't even have to get involved. But this is a way that you can kind of have an escalation of has it gotten to that final approver, and it'll only get there should everyone before me say that it was okay.
And you can see there it says for users or group. So A lot of times, teams will just put a group of, say, their technical leads or someone that, you know, a group of people that can actually approve the release to go to production.
Right, and when you put a group here, only one person in that group has to approve it to get the entire group's thumbs up, right? If you wanted, a lot of people want, I want one person from the dev team, one person from the ops team, and one person from the QA team. So they would put three groups there. And the way that that's configured is one person from each group would have to give a thumbs up before we'd actually be able to go into the next stage, which is really nice. So the approvers are a really powerful concept when it comes to our release system. If you compare our release system to our build system, it uses the exact same agents, which means it runs natively on Mac, Windows, and on Linux. It uses the same task library, so almost everything that you can do in build, you can do in release. If you can do it from a command line or a REST API, you can do it from our build system and our release system. So it's really powerful. The only thing that really makes release, in my opinion, different from our build system is the concept of environments and the concept of approvers.
Yeah.
Other than that, everything else is exactly the same.
This one here, or both, you know, the C# and Node, we have it triggered to kick off when a build is successful.
Right.
And so whenever there's a build for C# or for Node, it'll basically kick off as soon as that build is done. So in this way, the build ran, it compiled successfully, it ran unit tests, it got into this release definition automatically, it went through the dev environment, you know, the first environment there, deployed to it, ran functional tests, and now it waits for an approver, and then it goes to production. So a lot of it is automated. There's the one approval that you can or cannot have, depending, you can do some feature flagging to always let it go to production as long as it passed all the tests, or you can have approvers, and then it goes to production. So this helps you automate a lot of that and be with a clear mind saying that you know that it's been checked at several times with the test that you're writing before it goes to production.
Absolutely. We want to automate as much as we possibly can, but there's always that time where you need that human being just to give a thumbs up. Now, the human being's not touching any of the zeros and ones. Those are automatically being deployed, but we can put the brakes on our pipeline and just say, I want to get a human being sign off before we go and do this, and that's exactly what approvers allow you to do. Yep. Absolutely. So yes, and as you said, just simply by checking this box, now has it watching this build. As soon as this build is done, this will automatically trigger. You don't have to come in here and manually start it. But I do like to point out that you can manually start these. So you're not forced to wait for someone to do a commit. This is a really powerful concept. If you were to deploy a version of the bot, maybe you deployed version 368 and really bad things are happening and you would give anything to have 366 back in your environment, you could literally come choose 366, click on create, and this will redeploy the older version of the bot for you. This is sort of like a manual rollback. I want to roll back my system to the previous version. I still have that build around. Let me go and manually start a release of the old version and watch it release right back out into production for you. So I like having that explained to people so that they know that if they need to go back, they possibly can.
Yeah, and there are some teams that they if they detect things after it's deployed to production that are failing, they might trigger a rollback automatically as well.
Yeah, they can, and that feature is going to be added to release management here shortly. More and more people who are adopting DevOps practices are starting to come to the mindset of roll forward only, right? Because especially when you start dealing with data. It's really, really, it's almost impossible to roll back data. You can roll back a front end sometimes, but again, what we're trying to do, and you mentioned one of the techniques we use, which is feature flags, which allows us to put features out and simply turn the feature off should something bad happen. I don't have to roll back the software to get us back to a stable state. I simply turn the flag off. The application is now back up and stable. I can go work on a fix, push that fix back out, and then turn that flag back on, which again, there is no rollback there. We're constantly rolling forward. It's a different way of thinking, and I think it's a more of a mature mindset, but that's where a lot of us, and that's what we do in the VSTS team, for example.
There's a lot of teams that they, you know, any deployment that you make, it has to be behind a feature flag, otherwise it doesn't even pass the code approval.
Exactly, right? So every feature inside of VSTS today is behind a feature flag on day one. And then that feature flag will eventually be raised going forward. And you could do the same thing with your bots as well.
The last thing to mention, when Donovan showed the ARM template there, it had the Microsoft App ID and the app password. And those become environment variables in the web app once it's running your bot code. Mm-hmm. And those values there, they are picked up by the actual bot framework, the SDK. So both in Node, there's those two values, and in C Sharp, I think they're either the same value name or there's a little bit of a difference, but you also have to pass in app ID, password, and the bot name to it, and the bot SDK picks it up. So that's something that tricked a couple of folks that asked me after I presented about this internally, is how does it know which bot it's talking to if you're just setting these values? And that's because it overrides whatever you have in web.config, Azure Web Apps will override with the value that you have in the app settings. And it'll pick it up from there instead of from the value that you have in web.config.
Absolutely. There's one other key, but we're not going to talk about the App Insights yet. We're going to save that for our next show, where we start talking about telemetry. So that's all we wanted to show you about how to set up continuous deployment for your bot. Again, even though it's a bot, you can still use a lot of the same DevOps best practices that we use for all sorts of type of development. We've pointed out a couple of the things that make bots unique. For example, the bot state was one that's really unique. Mm-hmm. How do you set the values that make sure that we know what bot we're talking to? But at its core, it's still a lot of the same best practices we use for everything else. So thanks for joining us, and we'll see you in the next show. Thank you so much.